welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and if I was leprechaun, rich, and bored, my random business tycoon profession of choice would be, I would have a sliced bread factory, because it was on a list of the best inventions of the last 200 years.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and if I was leprechaun rich and became a business tycoon, I would bring back see-through technology from the 90s, like those see-through phones and video game consoles. Like, I would spend all my money bringing that back, because who needs charity, right?
Yes.
My name is Maddie Ness, and if I were leprechaun rich, I'm not going to get really creative here. I would be the leprechaun rich Willy Wonka. I'd have a chocolate factory for sure. Yep.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. Classic.
And I'm Sari Riley, and if I was leprechaun rich and bored, I'm going to go even more straightforward. I would have a Tupperware factory? I don't know why that's what came to mind. It's so useful. It's so useful to my daily life, and everyone needs it. That's it.
Amazing.
Yes.
And today on Cooler Than Homework, we are talking about Luck of the Irish, which, like, obviously has a tie into leprechauns. Mari, I hope you mentioned the random the random business tycoon in this movie to make that make sense.
I will now. Today's one of those note light days, so here we go. I'm going to do this the best I can. So, Kyle Johnson, we start the movie and he's having a bad dream that he's at the school, at his school's heritage night, but when they call his name, it's his turn to present. He's tiny sized and no one can see or hear him. So his dad wakes him up because it's time to go play a basketball game, and Kyle tells his parents about his dream and about heritage night and starts asking about where they're from, but his parents are real cagey about where they come from, and his dad is only like, we're from Cleveland. At the game that night, Kyle gets in a last second lucky shot, so his team wins and is going to the semifinals. And the next day at school, Kyle's the big man on campus. Bonnie Lopez, who is the head of the Heritage Committee, approaches him and asks him what he's going to be doing for Heritage Night, and he avoids this question because he doesn't know anything about his family, and he just kind of repeats that he's from Cleveland. So that night, Kyle asks his parents again where they're from, and they keep avoiding the question. So Kyle decides to do a little research of his own. Unfortunately, his last name is Johnson. So the Google results are not conclusive. Bonnie tries to help him with this research, but she tells him basically it's not enough info, and also he should find out where his mom's side of the family is from too. So she's like, go ask your parents again where you're from. Instead, Kyle goes through his father's yearbook and paperwork and finds out that Johnson was not always his name, like he changed his name, but he has to abandon, you know, his research because his mom almost catches him. So he's like, okay, bye. And he goes to hang out with his friend Russell. On a walk, well, I have not mentioned at all, actually, now that I get here, that Kyle has a lucky coin that he wears all the time. And we've seen throughout these scenes that he's like really lucky. So the lucky shot when he plays basketball, and he at one point was just guessing all the answers on a test, but he managed to get them all right. He's on a walk with his friend Russell, and he finds some money on the ground, and Russell's like, oh man, this always happens to you. So Kyle has a lucky coin and he's very lucky. And on this walk, they also see a flyer, and it has a symbol that Kyle recognizes from his lucky coin, and the flyer is for like an Irish festival of sorts. So he's like, well, let's go over there because maybe I'm Irish. At the festival, he meets an old man there who talks about his shoes a lot, and he watches some Irish step dancing, and when it's happening, he can't help himself from joining in on the dance. And when it's over, he like falls down, like he falls out of the magic or the trance or whatever. And another Irishman helps him up and puts a lay on him. The next day, Kyle wakes up and he's shorter and he stubs his toe and he goes downstairs, and his mom is like, got her red hair curly like out, and she's got an Irish accent all of a sudden, and so he's like, this is weird. at school, his bad luck continues. And then at the basketball game that night, he plays terribly. So he loses like his favor and popularity at school. Every day he keeps getting a little shorter and his luck keeps getting worse. And then one day he comes downstairs and finds that his mom is a leprechaun. Surprise! Kyle is obviously taken aback and he's a little bit worried because he's like getting shorter as well. So he tells them what happened, that he went to this Irish festival and he's figured out now that the coin that he has is not his. It got stolen. It got replaced with a fake one. So his mom is like, oh no, that's our luck. That's what keeps us from changing back into leprechauns. And she assumes that her father, Kyle's grandpa, took it. And Kyle's like, my grandpa. And she's like, surprise. You also have a living grandfather. And also, he is a potato chip tycoon.
There it is.
And not only is he a potato chip tycoon, but he recently moved his operations into this very city in which we live. So yeah, they go figure that they have to go confront grandpa, and because he's got their lucky coin and he's doing this to, I don't know, get back at them on purpose. And so they head off to go confront grandpa. Sort of on the way, Kyle finds out that the reason that there's like a break in the relationship between his mom and the grandpa is because mom married a non-leprechaun. And so they just kind of ran away, changed their name so their family would never find them. But here's grandpa with his potato chip factory in the city anyways. And so so dad and Kyle tried to get in and they're like, you know, we're here, your grandson is here, and grandpa refuses to see them. So Kyle ends up seeing that there's a field trip there from his school, and Bonnie's on this field trip for like young achievers or whatever it is. And so he sneaks into the factory with the young achievers, and there's a whole chase scene that ensues because the security guard is like, you can't be here. But eventually he runs into his grandpa, and so he's like, you have our lucky coin. And grandpa's like, no, I don't. And so Kyle tells him where he lost the lucky coin, and he's like, what was that guy's name? Seamus. The worst of the kinds of leprechauns. He definitely stole it. So they figure that they have to go get their coin back from Seamus. How do they find this man again? Somebody help me out here.
They just go to the fairground.
Oh, he's still at the fairgrounds?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
He just never left.
Yeah, he like lives and travels around in an RV filled with leprechaun gold.
Yes, yes. So they go to the fairgrounds where he never left, and in his RV that is also parked at this fairgrounds, they see that he's like got a safe full of leprechaun gold. Seamus sees them though, and he's like, gotta make a getaway. And there's a whole chase sequence that happens. Also, they don't have their luck, and Seamus and his lackeys like throw stew at them. and it causes them to go off road. And so they lose Seamus. And then also it starts raining. So everything is going really badly. But I'm very confused as to why they just sit like in the side of the road and like let it rain on them. But as they're doing that, feeling sorry for themselves, Bonnie is like, you guys, this is America. And we make our own luck. And then it stops raining. So the team is back on board. They're going to go find Seamus, fix their car, and everything's going to be okay. While this is happening, because it just stopped raining, a rainbow appears, and Grandpa Leprechaun is like, a rainbow! And he starts chasing after it. So the boys take after him as well. And at the end of the rainbow, it's the RV again with all the gold inside. So Grandpa and Kyle break into the RV, immediately find the lucky coin, but then Grandpa is all tempted by the rest of the lucky coins and he wants to steal it. So we have to have another speech that's like, but this is America! and Kyle convinces him not to steal the rest of the gold, but not in time, because Seamus finds them and grabs Grandpa by the beard and it demands to have the lucky coin back. So Kyle remembers that these type of really bad leprechauns love making bets. So he bets him that he can beat him in sports all of them. And if he beats him in sports, all of them, then he can have his lucky coin back and he has to release Grandpa. So they are transported to Ireland, shrug. And they have to play ye old sports. So there's hurling, there's throwing a cartwheel, there is throwing a spear, and then dancing. And Kyle wins some of them, but he loses some of them, so it's a tie. So Kyle's feeling pretty good about that until Seamus shakes fist. He's like, I said you had to beat me, not tie me, so I win. So Kyle is like, okay, one more bet. I can beat you without my luck. And if I beat you without my luck, then I get my lucky coin. You release my dad. And then you have to go to the land of my father and the shores of Erie. And Seamus is like, yeah, cool. We'll do that. Let's play basketball. And so they magic into the finale, the basketball game, with all these junior high students. And at first, Kyle's not playing great, but then his grandfather gives him a rousing speech about luck being on the inside. And Kyle's like, yeah, the luck of the Irish is in my heart. And then he's good at basketball and he beats Seamus. So he gets his lucky coin back. And Seamus is like, I don't even care because I'm going to Ireland, bitches, and I have gold over there. And Kyle's like, I said Erie and my dad's from Cleveland. So Seamus gets banned to Lake Erie. Everybody is not a leprechaun anymore. Bonnie and Kyle smile at each other. Oh, Heritage Night. And we get to Heritage Night.
The song.
And Kyle is wearing a Cleveland Brown shirt while he does Irish step dancing, which is great. And then at the end, he's like, you know, I really love my Irish heritage, but also we're all American. And they start singing This Land Is My Land. And I black out for a little bit, but It's the end of the movie, so it's fine. The end.
So before we unpack all of that, Matt, what's this cast up to now? Or what have they been up to in the 20 years since The Luck of the Irish?
Oh boy, 20 years, huh?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Sucks.
Don't want to think about that too much. First up, we have Ryan Merriman, who plays Kyle Johnson, the star of the film. We've talked about him once before for our Smart House episode, in which he was also the star. But I think, as I mentioned in that episode, you might recognize him from Final Destination 3 or Pretty Little Liars. We talked about him in the past and his angry milk gif face that people might recognize.
Thank you, Matt, for preempting our inevitable interruption to tell the people.
There is a famous gif of him. We mentioned it last time. We talked about it last time we recorded. The milk face is a prevalent thing in the world of Cooler Than Homework. There is a gif of Ryan Merriman angrily drinking milk that is very good.
Just like creepy. Like he's because he's like a child predator. He's an adult man who preys on teenage girls. On that show.
In Pretty Little Liars.
In Pretty Little Liars. Yes. Sorry, yes. To be clear, I am not slandering Ryan Merriman's actual name. This is the character he played in Pretty Little Liars.
It's impressive because if you think about how exactly you can drink milk creepily, like I don't know how that works until I saw that scene and then the gif and you're like, oh, okay, that's how you drink milk creepily.
Uh-huh.
Like, well done.
Yeah. If that was in the script as drinks milk creepily, he nailed it.
Nailed it.
Give him the Oscar.
So good at his job.
Yeah. But he seems to be, again, as we mentioned last time, living a just normal, chill life, doing lots of like skiing, snowboarding, riding ATVs. What's nice is that he is one of those former DCOM actors who is not ashamed of his DCOM past. Just this last St. Patrick's Day, he wished everyone a happy Luck of the Irish Day on St. Patrick's Day. He's still acting, doing a lot of things. And, you know, I love reading out the titles of these holiday TV movies that actors are doing. And he was recently in what might be my favorite one of these. It's called The Christmas Movie Christmas.
What?
Excellent.
It's apparently about two sisters who one loves Christmas movies and the other one hates Christmas movies. And then they start dating some dudes, and at one point they wake up and they're inside of a Christmas movie.
Very
so
meta.
It's like a meta. Yeah. My favorite detail of that movie is that the sister who loves Christmas movies, her name is Eve. So she's like Christmas Eve.
Wow.
I'm putting that on like a bonus podcast episode, like we're watching that. We have to. Yeah. So.
Whoever wrote the copy for it, like the plot synopsis on IMDb, needs to reword it a little bit because it sounds it says two cute sisters live together. One loves Christmas movies and the other calls them predictable. They meet, they fall in love, it snows,
what?
The end.
You missed a step.
Yep. So I'm like, wait.
The sisters
fall in love. It doesn't seem like that is the plot of this movie, which would be wild if it was. I haven't even watched a trailer for it, but it seems like it could be, you know, a fun time. Mm-hmm. The only review I'm looking at on IMDb says, 7 is the highest I will go out of 10 stars.
Good. I'm sure my parents have seen and loved this movie.
It was on Up TV.
I don't know what that is, but if it's a channel that has these kinds of movies, I'm sure my parents.
I think it's all
it
has.
I
think it's called Up TV because it's an uplifting stuff.
Oh yeah,
only.
There's no way my parents don't pay for that. Absolutely.
Yeah. No. Yeah. No, I have definitely been visiting my parents and seen them watching this channel in the past. So this is one of those moms turn it on and don't turn it off for 24 hours type of channel. Uh-huh. Why would I need to change the channel? But yeah, that's what Ryan Merriman's up to these days. He's doing that movie that we're all very excited to watch at some point. Henry Gibson plays Riley O'Reilly, the grandfather in this film. You might recognize him from The Blues Brothers or The Burbs or Magnolia, or his biggest role post Luck of the Irish was the priest in Wedding Crashers. He passed away in 2009, but fun fact, back in the 70s, he was the voice of Wilbur the Pig in Charlotte's Web.
Oh,
yeah.
A very fun fact.
Next, we have Alexis Lopez, who plays Bonnie Lopez in this movie. Before this, she was only in like an episode of Even Stevens and an episode of Seventh Heaven. And after this, she was only in one episode of That's So Raven and then stopped acting. But she went on to do some modeling and is now working in PR and seems to be the vice president at a PR company for luxury real estate.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She seems to be living a great life. She seems like she's probably doing pretty well financially and also like doing her modeling on the side. Mm-hmm. Like, good job, Alexis. We have Paul Kiernan, who plays Bob Johnson / Robert Smith, who is the dad. Don't have a ton to say about him. Couldn't find out much other than he's basically continued acting in things like Daddy Daycare and a bunch of other movies. And the mom is Merida Garrity. She plays Kate O'Reilly / Johnson / Kate Smith. They're good undercover names that they got going on. Can't be bothered to change their first names, just their last name to other generic last name.
Yeah, that's the thing. Smith is already so generic.
Like, why?
Well, and I didn't really, like, follow that part of the plot line of, like, okay, but why did you have to change your names? Like, it seems like he still found you pretty easily.
Yeah.
Some people might recognize her. Sari might after I say this. She played Nancy Taylor in Groundhog Day.
Oh.
Yeah. So she is the woman in Groundhog Day who Phil pretends to know from school after he learns all about her one of the days and is like, oh, where'd you go to high school? What class did you take? And the next day he's like, oh, yeah, I sat behind you in this class, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's one of her more like famous recognizable roles. But after acting in Luck of the Irish, she went on to be in things like Charmed and Numbers and CSI, but nothing since 2009.
When you started that sentence, like Sari's going to know after I said this, I am embarrassed that I didn't immediately guess because I was like, what the fuck is he gonna say? Like, what could he possibly say that he's confident Sari's gonna know? Groundhog Day, of course.
Groundhog Day. A movie that I've seen so many times.
Yeah, the only things I'm ever confident that I can say to Sari that she will for sure know is a movie that she has seen at least 8 times.
Well, like, I was trying to think, it was like, she was a voice in Pokemon. and I was like trying to picture really fast of like, was there an Irish character?
Next up, we have Glendon Chapman, who played Russell, the best friend in this film. He acted in a few things after Luck of the Irish, but nothing really of note. He now seems to own a smoothie company, and there was a lot of words describing things that the smoothie company sells, and I didn't really understand what of them was in the smoothies and what of them was not in the smoothies, because it says they have high-quality Irish sea moss gel and organic smoothies and sea moss soap. So it seems like Irish sea moss gel is the main product, and then they put that into soap and smoothies. So
okay,
I don't know.
Wait, how is he selling? I was gonna say, is this like another restaurant we have to go to?
It but seems one online.
Okay, good, because not interested.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a Grandy Moss, GrandyMoss is the name of the company. And they have 3 things on their website. It's a 12-ounce peach and Papa Moss smoothie.
Listen, if they had an actual restaurant of some sort, we would add it to the list. Like, we would have no choice but to have the sea moss smoothies. So I'm really glad. I'm really glad that it's an online-only arrangement.
Well, if we buy enough of the smoothies online, it
absolutely
can support
not.
Them, and they can open up a physical location.
Do not buy the sea moss smoothies.
Tell whether it's food or a facial thing.
Well, I can tell you, Sari, sea moss has 92 minerals, helps keep a healthy thyroid. Sea moss is also a prebiotic,
nice.
Which is a type of dietary fiber that's essentially fertilizer for probiotics.
Nice.
Our sea moss gel is great for effective digestion. Sea moss keeps your metabolism running well. Sea moss helps to maintain a healthy weight. Sea moss supports healthy hair, skin, and nail growth. You can add our sea moss gel to foods like your morning smoothie. It doesn't have much flavor. It ends with, it doesn't have much flavor. And also, the reason I wasn't breathing in there is because there's very little punctuation in that description on their about page. There's a lot of random capitalization, but little punctuation.
You know what, though? It sold me. It sold me. I love a healthy metabolism and nail growth, so...
Yeah, and very little flavor. My favorite things. And last but certainly not least is Timothy Omundson as Seamus McTiernan, the evil leprechaun man / dancer extraordinaire. People might recognize him from Psych, or the musical show Gallivant, or Supernatural.
That's where I know him. Okay, I was like, this man looks familiar, but I can't tell if he has a distinctive face. I watched Gallivant. It was like my background show for a while.
Yeah.
He's the king, right?
Yes. He is a main character in Gallivant. I've only seen a little bit of that show.
King Richard.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like a goof. Ah, Timothy.
Yes. Timothy's a great man. I like Timothy a lot. He is great in Psych. He is great in everything. In 2017, he suffered a major stroke, and he had to relearn how to walk, and like there was fear that he maybe couldn't do any more acting anymore. But he recently started taking on more roles, and in the last few years, he's been in This Is Us and Psych. They did some spinoff movies, and he acted in both of those. And they both incorporated his stroke into his character. So he plays like a guy who is recovering from a stroke in This Is Us. And also in Psych, they added that to the character. So he is back acting, which seems to be his favorite thing. Based on everything I've seen of him online, Aww. Is that just acting is his favorite thing. So, yeah, it's very nice that he gets to do that still.
I love that for him.
Yeah. And yes, I need to watch Gallivant because it seems very fun and charming.
If you like Disney stuff, which I know you do, like all the songs are just like funny and weird, and it pokes fun at like traditional prince saves princess narratives. And it has like a lot of random cameos that are quite good. Like Weird Al is in an episode. And Luke Youngblood, who plays Lee Jordan in Harry Potter, but like Magnitude on Community, and is just like
Pop Pop.
He's in it as like a main character. It's good. It's like quite charming.
Oh, and it seems the music and lyrics are by Alan Menken, who did like the songs for The Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, Pocahontas. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everyone, go watch Gallivant, I guess.
All right. Luck of the Irish nostalgia check. Did you watch this before watching it for this podcast?
Every year on St. Patrick's Day. Pretty much, yes.
Yes, I did. Same. This is the, I'm spoilers for the upcoming episodes, but this is the last in a long run that I actually watched. So, Luck of the Irish, my last, like, yes, I watched it all the time.
I also have seen this movie so many times. I feel like what I remembered of this movie is, like, your plot synopsis, and then there's just a lot of, like, stuff in between that I was like, huh. So this was like an interesting one for my nostalgia because I feel like it, this one felt different now as an adult. But I have seen this movie so many times. I felt like I knew this movie inside and out. There were some things that I didn't remember, but we'll talk about it.
And I have never seen it. As you can tell from my plot guess last time.
Oh, man.
I got leprechauns, but nothing else. Couldn't have predicted this roller coaster of a movie.
So did you like this movie? Matt, you every year, like still now every year on St. Patrick's Day? Like when was the last St. Patrick's Day that you watched this movie?
I would say... if not last year, the year before.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah, because I think last year at this point, we would have had Disney Plus. So I think I would have had such easy access to it that I probably put it on St. Patrick's Day last year. And yeah, it's one of those where there's not a lot of St. Patrick's Day media out there in the world. So it's, it's for me, it's like one of those, I don't sit down and pay a lot of attention to it every year when I put it on, but it's usually at least on in the background. I would say maybe every other St. Patrick's Day. I'm not super devoted to making sure I can't miss it. I didn't watch it this year.
This is incredible. Okay, by comparison, this is one of my least favorite DCOMs that we've watched so far. I don't know why. I think I can articulate why when we get into the discussion of it, but I think I made a mistake somewhere down the road and put the horse movies, they're now middling in my list, but this movie, I just didn't have fun, and it was very sad that I didn't have fun. I just kept being annoyed at decisions the characters made and at, like, situational things of the plot that felt like they could be resolved much easier, and I was not overwhelmed with whimsy at, like, the transporting to Ireland or, like, the gold plot. It just wasn't for me. The America message, by the time they start singing This Land at the end, I was like, no, I'm so done with this movie. May I turn it off?
Yeah, so there are portions of this that I'm like, okay, I see why I like this as a child. And also, it's hard for me to rank. By comparison, all of the horse movies are at the bottom of my list. Mm-hmm. So if you're a can of worms or a horse movie, like, you're down at the bottom. So this is like around this middle portion that I'm not sure. Like, it would take a lot for me to decide, would I rather watch this or Quince or Phantom of the Megaplex? Like, I don't know. They're all on the same level for me. But the thing that really got me, it's not that I'm like, this is the worst movie we've ever seen, but it was all the messaging stuff that I can't, right now in 2021, in this economy, like I just couldn't do it. So that's why it's like towards the end of my list as well.
It's very near the middle of my list. I think it's a little bit higher than it is on yours, but like it solidly middling. And it's mostly just a lot of me like doing the like this or this.
Yeah.
And like sort of pulling it up. It is as high up on my list as it is solely because the nostalgia is strong enough. Like if I were like Sari and had watched this movie for the first time last night, I would have very different feelings. Like, I think it would be a lot lower. That being said, yes, all of the like aggressive America messaging was really something. And I didn't remember that being so much of a thing. And I just, the only way that you can tell a like super pro-America, like, immigrant story like this is they're fucking Irish. Like, I just,
yes.
I don't know. I just, it's, there's even the bit, too, in the, when they're sitting in the car in the rain complaining, and there's this fucking white family complaining about how unlucky they are, and the kids' two non-white friends are, like, telling them to cheer up, or, like, giving them a pep talk, and they talk about the Irish when they came over and they did all the jobs nobody wanted to do. Like, I just... Oh!
Yeah. Okay, I don't even know if I want to, like, keep talking about this or talk about, like, the stuff I liked. But the fact that, you know, we have this setup where we've seen it time and time again in the comms where you have, like, the white kid main characters and they're people of color best friends. It hit different in this particular movie because of, like, the storyline and the fact that it was, like, this constant messaging of, like, I don't know, the Irish family being like, we had to hide because of how we were treated. And, like, you're telling this to your black friend? Like, sir, I am uncomfortable watching this. So there's, like, no amount of like, the funny stuff or, like, the step dancing or, like, hurling chariot wheels that was, like, that made up for the fact that in the next scene we would get, like, a pro-America message. You know, no thank you.
Yeah, just using, like, the Irish oppression narrative as the central thing and using, like, a fictional species of leprechaun as the mixed marriage example, as, like, the product of a mixed marriage where my white family was kind of shitty to my mom for being Asian. It was like, this feels very weird in that, like, you're both white. And one of you is Irish, and one of you is a leprechaun, and, like, that is being portrayed as the thing that is driving the family apart or, like, caused all this drama with heritage. It's like,
yeah.
No, there are so many other, like, mixed kid stories that you could tell that would be more nuanced and more complicated, like, in addition to the fact that Kyle, the lucky kid who is suddenly unlucky, is being portrayed as, like, the struggle over his heritage when his black and brown friends are not being given the same level of nuance. Just, ooh, not a good first experience with this movie for me.
Yeah, and this is the stuff where, for me, I think because I have watched this so many times over the years, that this is the stuff that I fully acknowledge is bad, is not good about this film. But because I've watched it so many times, that's the stuff I'm like, oh, yeah, here's the bad part. Here's the not great part.
Yeah.
That, like, the nostalgia on this, because I've seen it so many times and it's so, like, lives in my memory, sort of, like, bumps it higher up on the list for me. Not because I think it is a better movie, like, more well-made than things like Motocrossed or The 13th Year or Quince, but because I'm looking at it as, like, what would I rather watch? And for me, I'm like, okay, would I rather watch The 13th Year, which I've seen once and I liked, or would I rather watch this movie that I know for sure I usually have a pretty good time with when I watch it every year? And so for me, it's a little bit like, yeah, like, I roll my eyes at a lot of it as I'm watching it, and the last, like, 20 minutes doesn't really need to exist, but something about the nostalgia really pushes this one high up the list. It's nowhere near as good as, like, that top five sort of Color of Friendship, Brink, Smart House section of the list, but it, yeah, for me, it's one of those that I watched so much as a kid that it's hard to not have that nostalgia overpower a lot of that. So I can totally see, if watching this for the first time now, putting it lower on the list. That makes total sense to me.
It is sort of like the classic fantasy thing of, like, inventing racism for white people. Like, I just, why, yeah, though?
It is, and it's, you know, there's nostalgia there for me too. Like, I remember watching so much of this, but it was wild to me because it's exactly what Nicole described as a, like, oh, the parts I forgot were all of the America stuff. Like, I just, I did not recall a single moment of that. Like, I I don't know. It was so weird that every time I was like, what? It was like a part of the movie that my brain had chosen to completely just delete. Uh-huh. And the underlying messaging here too, like, right, okay, he loses his luck. And his luck is what has brought him all this way. And then you have his black and brown friends, right, that they're the whole time they're like, trying really hard and trying to like thinking about scholarships and being good at science and being good at sports and trying to get ahead. And then they're the ones who have to be like, oh, without your luck, you just have to try very hard. And he's like, okay. And he still gets ahead and then gets his luck back. Uh-huh. Okay. I mean, sure.
Like in comparison, he talks about he now has bad luck, but really it's just he lost his always good luck. So that he did not have to try at anything previously. He was just automatically good at everything. So now that he has to try, that's like the worst situation we can imagine for this young boy. Is like, oh my God, he has to learn how to try.
And there's a bit that is like almost getting it on the messaging. There's like one line where she's like, you would be a much better person if everything hadn't come so easy to you.
Yes.
It is the best messaging in the whole movie. But then like it's not followed up on meaningfully. Like it's just sort of tossed out there.
And then Bonnie loops around after he does bad during the basketball game and apologizes to him. She's like, oh no, sorry.
Right.
Sorry, I called out your privilege. Hope that didn't screw you up. It's like, no. Don't do that.
I feel like we've had this in a handful of DCOMs where we've talked about this deeper message that's just right there under the surface and that they almost dig into and then it doesn't go anywhere. Or they like one of the friends on the side is like, hey, what about this thing? And everyone's like, yeah, you're right, but we're never going to talk about that again. And I think it, to me, that feels like one of those of like a studio or a producer saying like, oh, let's like tamp that down a little bit. Because like, we have experiences like The Color of Friendship, which is always, I think, going to live number one on our list of best DCOMs, where they went for it. They let the message be the movie. And there in so many of these, you see the glimmer of a message where it's coming through or it's about to come through. And it feels like they're like, eh, let's focus more on the leprechauns and the basketball.
Mm-hmm. I imagine similarly where you have that scene where they're just getting rained on for whatever reason and they're like, okay, Bonnie's gonna give a rousing speech about how when the Irish first got here and did the jobs that got paid little, I can imagine somebody being like, there's a black kid in the car. And then it'd be like, oh, okay, give him a line about how at least they got paid and like we did it. We covered it. And it's like, did you cover it? I don't know.
Yeah, that feels like people should have maybe reacted to what he said or had like a change in the conversation. But it was like, no one reacted to what he said. And they just kept talking about the Irish again.
Yeah, and even I don't want to like keep harping on this, but this is definitely the root of why I had such a horrible time with this movie. All the attention that was paid to Kyle's heritage and like Bonnie helping him figure out like Google Johnson, but like the fact that they had right there with Kyle, his two best friends, like contrasting different immigrants to America stories, that could have been very, I think, poignant, where it's like, mm-hmm. oh, well, it's weird that my parents aren't telling me where we came to America because I know we immigrated from Europe probably because we're white or like uh-huh. I'm Irish. Whereas his friend could say like, I don't know because my family was brought on slave ships and just like letting that sink in. But instead, it was like in addition to using the creating the white oppression and like the white racism, it like blocked out any opportunity to talk about like the experience of a Latinx immigrant or a black immigrant or like other stories that feel more interesting and like actually filled with hardship in a way that this fictionalized leprechaun story had like grains of truth in it, but was largely just imagined based on like the mythology of a leprechaun.
And it could have been so easy, like that could have been slotted in very easily, and they could have made him reckon with the fact that, like, yes, what your family went through 100 years ago is important. We're not trying to downplay that, but our families are still going through this on a day-to-day basis, facing discrimination. Please acknowledge that your friends are facing discrimination.
It's the kind of thing where it feels like they thought that they were doing something by, like, making his friends not be white, but, like, in fact, they made it worse. Some of those conversations would have played a little differently, but, like, they just were so much worse. They were bad, and then they were made worse by the fact that he is whining about this shit to them.
Yes. And without ever really recognizing either, until the end, where Grandpa steps in to fix all of Bonnie's problems or whatnot. But, you know, he's like, oh, man, like, I have such bad luck. Sir, you are the heir to a potato chip fortune. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear about your bad luck, you know, because it doesn't matter. I think also, I joked about, like, in this economy, but, like, truly, I think that, you know, we talk a lot about how with a lot of these movies, because they end up being, you know, very middling sort of nothing, a lot of what affects us is, like, how your day is going and what were you doing before and after. And so, like, in this present news cycle where we're just inundated with, like, you know, things about police brutality and, you know, over the last, you know, however many years or whatever, we're hearing a lot about, like, native land and the way that we treat, like, indigenous peoples and, you know, the pipelines and all of this. Like, sitting here and watching this movie, it truly, truly was a moment of, I cannot in this economy watch this. And, you know, the whole, like, this land is your land thing, like, this is not the moment. It is not the moment for this movie. So, like, I mean, is it ever? I don't know. But particularly now, I just wasn't in the mood for what this was trying to sell me.
I'm kind of surprised, like, I knew this was a 2001 movie, but I'm, like, kind of surprised that it came out pre 9/11 because of the aggressive patriotism that was happening in media post 9/11, that this feels like it could have been something that came out in, like, 2002 post 9/11, where they were just like, America is the most important thing in the world. Let's talk about it. And yeah, so I'm sure it still resonated later on throughout with people, but that it's very bizarre, that moment at the end where they're just like, all right, everyone got that song queued up that no one talked about that we were going to sing? Just like, the dance was his thing. Who said they could do a song as well?
Yeah, I mean, it turns out that America, fuck yeah, is an evergreen thing in American media. but you're right that it like, to think about the fact that they made this movie in 2000, like, pre 9/11, what awaits us? What things has my memory suppressed that awaits us in 2002? So that's a fun thing to look forward to.
Oh, no, 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 no.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Oh, no. I'm thinking forward more. We do get some light military motifs.
Yeah. Yes.
I remember that.
The light military motifs, but that one, I am confident that I will still love it because I am 100%, the internet has convinced me that that movie is actually gay. Disney won't allow it, but it's gay, and I know it's gay, and so I'm gonna have a great time knowing in my heart the truth that Disney won't admit that is a gay movie.
Okay, wait. Similarly, back when we started this podcast and we were announcing we're gonna watch all of the DCOMs, I did not save this at all. So, you know, if you're listening and it was you, somebody, like, tweeted at us and was like, oh, when you guys get to this movie, and it was The Luck of the Irish, like, I don't remember the scene, and can you believe it was in there? And it was a scene where the kid says, well, at least we got paid. And I think we all watched it and we were like, damn, go Disney. Oh, snap. Because we just had those 5 seconds. So I would like to reply now to whoever it was that tweeted that. It was not the oh, snap moment that we thought it was. It was, in fact, terrible. And I want to take my snaps and my cookies away from Disney because they did nothing.
Oh, fun fact that I learned, a couple fun facts that I learned while researching this film. One, the trivia said this film is actually a favorite of the children of director Zack Snyder. So,
wow-wee.
I'm not sure how that information
like
got to the internet, but I guess release the Snyder cut of Luck of the Irish is what I'm asking for.
I die.
Incredible. Zach Atlas Shrugged Snyder's kids love the love the white oppression movie. Incredible. Incredible.
And I found it interesting that this movie was also apparently remade for Disney Channel India, where it's called Luck Luck Keybot. And there it's sort of it seems like it ties into the Aladdin story that they like the family might have like a genie history instead of a leprechaun history. Yeah, it seemed interesting. There wasn't a lot of information out there to research about it, but just the fact that they decided to remake it and make some changes was interesting.
They were like, this is the one. The one that we need to localize. Our discussion topic this episode, inspired by Heritage Day, is how important was your family's heritage when you were growing up? Was that a big deal to you?
I could start because I feel like my upbringing was, I think part of why I didn't enjoy this movie was also because of like the shadiness around, like the meaninglessness of the shadiness behind his heritage of like his parents not expressing it, where like it was something... Growing up as like a biracial kid, it was very obvious that I was of mixed heritage to me and to like my brother. And so we talked about it very openly and honestly of like, oh, yes, I am half Asian. My mom is Malaysian Chinese. I am half white. I'm like a mixture of Irish and German and Polish and I don't know, generic European countries. And like that was it. I think maybe we had a school project around second grade where we had to bring in heritage stuff. And I remember feeling like it was kind of cool of like, here, look, I can count to 10 in Mandarin. And also I eat German sausages and like my dad cooked this for the class. I guess I remember my heritage growing up being a fairly present topic where like it would keep coming up. Like I remember very distinctly my mom dropping me off at a friend's house to study in high school. And they asked me if I was adopted. And I was like, no, that's my mom. She gave birth to me. So like being biracial, I couldn't really avoid the discussion of heritage of just like, yes, I look white. Yes, that is my biological mom. That's it. Here's my mixture. I've always been aware of it, and I haven't been curious enough to do like a 23andMe or anything. I don't think it would tell me anything that my family hasn't already told me. So I haven't taken the plunge to do that, but maybe someday.
Yeah, I took the 23andMe stuff, and it pretty much just reaffirmed what my family had always kind of said. Heritage was not a super important thing as a kid to my family or me. And it was that sort of generic whiteness that we were sort of like, I don't know, we're American, we're probably Irish, we're probably German, we're probably whatever. But we never really leaned into any of it. There was never like a family meal that was passed down through the years from our Irish ancestors, because on my mom's side of the family, at least, they've been here for a while. Like, they've been in America for a few generations, so there's not a lot, like a recent immigrant story or anything like that. And on my dad's side, he doesn't know much about his family other than there's some Polish people who came from Poland hundreds of years ago. So there was this whole thing where growing up, it was just kind of like the, yeah, I don't know, we're Irish, we're whatever. And then I took the 23andMe and it was like, yeah, you're half British Irish and you're half French German. So you get all the European. So it's that thing where it was not really surprising. It's still something I am curious about now as I get older and like think about potentially having a kid of my own in the future who might ask me these questions of like, ah, yeah, you know, I should probably ask my parents these questions more than I currently do, just to see if they know more than they shared with me as a kid. Because, yeah, I don't, there's like whole limbs of my family tree where I'm just like, oh yeah, I know that person's first name. I have zero idea anything about them or where they could have come from. So it's one of those things that every time I log into my 23andMe, I start falling down that rabbit hole of like, oh yeah, my great-great-grandmother on this side was born in England and there's a church with the same last name as she had. I wonder if we're whatever. And I suddenly am like 2 hours into researching things and I'm like, clearly I do care about this, but I haven't sat and like done the actual, like I haven't paid for anything like Ancestry.com or any of those to really get deep into it. But there is a curiosity that still is in there.
Yeah, my answer is fairly similar in that, like, I don't know, man, I'm just really white. And so my family heritage is, it's like European. I mean, I did the 23andMe also not expecting any surprises. I was just sort of like curious. I was actually, I don't know, equally as curious about what kind of health problems 23andMe could tell me I had.
yeah.
Fortunately, nothing. They had no information for me on that front. But my map is just Europe. Like that's it. That's like,
yeah.
None of this was surprising. And it's also, it tracks completely with, you know, like what I knew from my family and that like, it's not just Europe, but it's like, 23andMe sort of subdivides. And so it's like aggressively Northwestern European. Growing up, it was also just like not a huge thing. My dad's side of the family is pretty Irish. And like when we spent time with them, it seemed like they were more invested in their Irishness than my dad has ever appeared to be. And then for like heritage-y stuff or whatever, like when we had to do, you know, whatever stuff like this, where like you would bring in things like that were reflective of your heritage. Like my dad was never participating in that. That was always my mom helping me with it. And so like for her, it is definitely much more just like generically broadly European. And so the thing that she zeroed in on and like the most recent relative that she knows like came here was Swiss. So no lie, I brought in fucking Toblerone. Like that was my, like whenever we had a thing like this, I was like, well, this is what we do. This is like what I have. And like, I don't know. And actually like when I did my 23andMe, that like the French and German is only 7%. So it's like not, I don't know. That was like the one that my mom knew. And so whatever.
That's like the Polish stuff for me. Like when growing up, my dad was always like, we are Polish. Your great grandfather is Polish. Da, da, da. And I was like, oh, he must be from Poland. It's like, no, my grandfather was born in Chicago in the early 1900s. He had a last name that ended in ski. So he sounded really Polish. But it's that same thing where going to school, I would take in like kolaczki's and all these like Polish like little desserts and stuff. And then Poland doesn't even show up on my 23andMe. And I'm like, where are we from? Because it's like everywhere in Europe except for Poland, apparently, is where I'm actually from.
Hello. Okay. So I could do a whole podcast episode about this. So I am a first-generation American. My parents are both Dominican. So I grew up in South Florida in a relatively, like, diverse and, like, populous area. But even so, like, I can think back to key times where I was realizing things about my growing up and my identity. So things like, I think being in the second or third grade and a substitute teacher was the first time that I told somebody that I was Dominican and they understood where that was. And he was like, oh, I've actually been to the Dominican Republic. They have great resorts there. Have you ever been? And I was kind of like, what? No, I don't. What did I know as a second grader about resorts, right? So like visiting the Dominican Republic for the first time as a kid and thinking that I was sitting in like a princess bed and then like later realizing it was a mosquito net because, you know, just you needed them and having the lights go out and like seeing the barrio, the neighborhood where my father grew up. And so all of those things that are like pieces of me, like I always knew I was Dominican. We had Dominican flags everywhere because my father is like proud Dominican and being like that sort of like pride, especially as an immigrant, was like a big thing. Funnily enough, I've always been like a writer and creative writer or whatnot, but like part of the identity work that I did like in middle school was that a lot of my creative writing was around realizing the things that were in my house that were not quote unquote normal that I just grew up with and I didn't know. So I had a whole series in middle school that I wrote called Grandpa Was a Sugar Daddy. And like there were short stories or like essays of like things that I realized came like Grandpa Was a Sugar Daddy and we have a framed photo of Sammy Sosa. And so like talking about like different things that like were in my house that I was realizing, oh, this is like a Dominican thing. Like, and I didn't know until I started growing up and like meeting other people and then being like, what? And I'm like, what? Not everybody does that. And this like continued into well into like my college years. I remember we were visiting college friends and it was a group. Oh my God. Rich Camilucci, who has been on our podcast before. Like I was visiting him and some friends and we went into their apartment. And we're like, this is gross. We're cleaning up here. So we like helped clean up and I was like washing dishes and I was stowing things away. And I ended up putting like a bunch of extra shit that they had in the oven. Caribbean people do this all the time. We just stash stuff in it's like additional storage. And I never thought anything about this until a week later after we left. Like one of the roommates texted me and was like, I preheated the oven to like make something and you put our plastic stuff in there. And I was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. Like I had, like, and he was like, why would you put it in there? I'm like, it's storage. It's where it goes. Like, I don't know. Like, so my entire life has been like, ma'am, this is very Dominican and you just don't know until somebody points it out to you. So heritage was huge. You know, there's just been like a lot of identity work that I've had to do in my later life because I've always just been Dominican. But there were so many things that I was like, you know, when you have to like choose like an identity box, right? Or a race box, like it's like white, black, indigenous, and like none of that I thought like ever fit for me. And so my parents were very just all like before even like Hispanic or Latino became a box, which it's like a whole thing anyways now. But all of that was like so confusing for me as a child. And then it wasn't until like I got as an adult that I started doing some of this identity work. And then I was like, oh, like Dominicans are basically European, black, and indigenous. Like that's the mixture that we are. It goes very much more in depth because of like the weird history that the Dominican Republic has and because colonization and all of that, and some of that like internalized racism or whatnot. But, and also a lot of this, like when we had to do like family trees and I had to go ask my parents, like, okay, here's our grandparents, who were their parents? And they're like, ah, you know, we don't really have medical records or birth certificates. And we just have family stories and we don't know anything beyond sort of like great grandparent level. So that was always very confusing to me when people could be like, oh, my family in the Civil War. And I was like, I don't know, man. I have none of that information. All of that to say that I did do like an ancestry.com thing. I am 32% Spanish, 15% Portuguese, 15% from like West Africa where the slave trade happened, 10% from Senegal, and then 6% indigenous from the Hispaniola Islands, so Haiti and Dominican Republic. So those are the Taino people that are basically wiped out in the Dominican Republic. So, and then after that, like I have so much that is like in the 4, 3, 2, and 1% range. So Ireland, Mali, Italy, Nigeria, like just a bunch of stuff that is like 1%. And I'm like, what does that mean? yeah. So that's me.
I repressed it or something, but like the stress when it comes to checking the what race are you box,
yes,
is extremely real. Particularly when it's like choose. Specifically to my experience, when it says choose one,
yes.
And then I'm staring at it and I'm like, but I'm half. So do I like check the white box or do I check like the lump Asian box or do I just check other? And a lot of times when I was growing up, I was like, I guess I'll check other.
Yes.
And now they've started to include like two or more races as an option. But the start of my many like identity introspection crises and like thought about what my heritage is and who I am came from having to check boxes on a form.
Yes, absolutely. And I remember like my parents really being mad at this too because they wouldn't want to check anything other than other, but they didn't want to check other either. They'd be like, oh, we're not other. And even now, like filling out job applications all the time, it's like, you know, I can either do, even if it allows me to check multiple, like white and black, or I can do multiple races. But then it's usually like all of these things, not Hispanic or Latino. Mm-hmm. So then I was like, okay, well, I have to do like Hispanic or Latino, but I'm also like, that's not the end of the story. So the box checking is to this day a thing that every time that I see it, I'm like, I want to check your freaking boxes. Yeah. But here we are.
And now it is time to share the lessons that we learned from Luck of the Irish. I cannot wait to hear your answers to this one.
I'm just going to go ahead and do what I normally do and steal a quote from the movie. And the lesson I learned is that in America, we don't believe in kings. We believe in baseball.
I learned that you should not make growing shorter a plot point ever in a movie because you're not going to stick to it. It's not going to work.
I learned that Irish people manifest despair by playing the flute. and since I am a quarter Irish, I guess I should set about learning to play the flute so that I too can manifest.
Yeah, we need flutes, Nicole.
And manifest despair.
I learned that a little known power that leprechauns have is breaking into safes.
And now it is time for Sarah to guess the plot of our next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are watching Hounded.
I'm heading into this with the bias that my life has brought me, which is one, I love beagles. And two, we tried to train our beagle to do a like tracking competition, like an American Kennel Club track. She was horrible at it. She just ran to the food. But that's like a type of competition. So there's like agility competitions, and those are the way the dogs like jump through hoops and stuff like that. She was not athletic, so she couldn't do that. But then tracking is just like your dog follows their nose, and I think it's supposed to be a recreation of old hunts. So this is what I'm going all in on. There is a family with a boy named Robbie, and they have a prized beagle, and they are training this beagle for these tracking competitions. It's like a sports movie, and we get to see a lot of like cute dogs sniffing around on the ground and like following lures, but their dog is too good at these competitions. So a rival family and their boy named Steven sneaks in to Robbie's house or like fakes a friendship with Robbie and then steals their dog, hence the name Hounded, both a movie about hounds doing what they do best, which is sniff, and about Robbie and his parents, but realistically, because it's a decom, mostly the kid trying to track down his missing hound from this mean neighbor kid or mean like semi-competitive kid that has stolen it. And to wrap it up or throw me completely off course, could I have the tagline?
The tagline for Hounded is, taking care of this dog is no walk in the park.
Okay, yeah, I'm on. I have it nailed down.
So confident.
I love it.
Taking care of this dog. Maybe this championship beagle is also a little rascally, like gets out, things like that. And so there's probably part of the plot where Robbie's just like, oh no, he got out again. Better go visit his favorite spots, like the chicken man down the street, or like my dog, for example, would always run up the street to a Great Dane's house because they would always give her like pieces of soft food and meat and fatten her up. She would be so round after going to this Great Dane's house. But like that's where we would find Taffy if she escaped, was up the street. So similarly, this beagle or hound dog would run to the places. But then Robbie went to those places and they were like, we haven't seen your dog. So then the mystery is afoot. And then you find your dog, the bad kid gets punished somehow of like, oh, rats, I shouldn't steal a dog. Like, that's not how you maintain a relationship with a dog. It needs to be full of love and affection. And then the main character dog and Robbie win the tracking competition, and then the movie ends with like, where'd he go? And then the dog pops out of the trophy. In like a classic, very cute ending shot of like, oh no, is it another mystery? But it's just, no, he was just snoozing in the trophy. The end.
What a amazing, charming and wonderful movie. Join us next time to find out if that is actually what Hounded is. If you are enjoying this podcast, tell your friends, rate and review it, all that good stuff. We would love to hear your thoughts on this episode and on Luck of the Irish. If you have seen it recently, please tell us all your thoughts. There will be a post dedicated to this episode up at snarksquad.com/decom, or you can find us on Twitter at @decomsquad. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos, and you can also find me. I have a new podcast, another podcast on top of this one called Commitment, where my friend Sam Schultz and I are watching everything that's ever existed that the Muppets have ever done in chronological order.
I don't have a new podcast, but you can find me at My Name is Muddiness.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
This podcast is a Snark Squad production, edited by me, transcribed by Mari, and our theme music is by Stefan Chin.
And last, but certainly not least, because he's my favorite, we have Tiffin. We have Tip. Wow. We have. I can't say the word Timothy. Timothy. I kept saying Tipothy.
You got too overwhelmed with excitement about this
man. I'm too excited for Timothy.